Yashoranandana Vrajatanaranjana Yashoranandana Vrajatanaranjana Yamuna Kiravana Kari Yamuna Kiravana Kari Yaya Radha Madhava Pujari Pujana Valava Giri Radha Yashoranandana Vrajatanaranjana Yashoranandana Vrajatanaranjana Yamuna Kiravana Kari Yaya Radha Madhava Kundari Hari Abhijana Valada Guru Radha Vishnu Paramahamsa Parivijaka Acharya Stotra Satya Sri Srimad Divine Grace Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koda Vaishnavinda Ki Vishkan Pando Jaya Divine Grace Sri Prabhupada Ki Gosvami Andi All glories to the Sama Devotee All glories to the Sama Devotee All glories to the Sama Devotee All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Nama Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadya Tana Sinti Vakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namana Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vittana Nirvishesha Sunyavana Prasadya Devi Vittana Hare Krishna Let me join in Mukti's welcome to all devotees to our program this evening. We have a bit of a special program we're going to do, special presentation for you today. We're going to have a dramatic reading. After a few opening remarks by myself, we'll have a dramatic reading by Madhumati Dasi and Sanadarshini Dasi. I don't see them here. Oh, there's tears. The team back there, you're going to have to move forward, but as you like when you get closer to the presentation. So they'll do a dramatic reading, and then there'll be some concluding words. So we start with Bhagavad Gita, third chapter, text number 3. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, the Gita text, chapter 3, text number 3. Sri Bhagavan Vacha. Lokeshmin-vita-nistha Pura Putta Mayanava. Jnana Yogini Sankhyanam. Jnana Yogini Yoginam. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation, and the others by devotional service. I picked a particular section of Prabhupada's purport that I'm going to focus on, so I'll read that now. It contains actually two of my favorite sayings by Srila Prabhupada. I think you'll recognize them as we go through the section of the purport. Srila Prabhupada says, religion without philosophy is sentiment, and sometimes fanaticism. While philosophy without religion is mental speculation. The ultimate goal is Krishna. Because the philosophers who are also sincerely searching after the absolute truth come in the end to Krishna consciousness. This is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita. The whole process is to understand the real position of the self in relation to the super self. The indirect process is philosophical speculation by which gradually one may come to the point of Krishna consciousness. And the other process is directly connecting everything with Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Of these two, the path of Krishna consciousness is better because it does not depend on purifying the senses by a philosophical process. Krishna consciousness is itself the purifying process, and by the direct method of devotional service, it is simultaneously easy and sublime. Om Janakamananda Sarganandana Sarasaya Chakramilitanyena Tajman Shri. So my two favorite things that are in this purport: one, religion without philosophy is sentiment, while philosophy without religion is mental speculation. We've all heard that many times, correct? Trying to understand that is what we're going to do today. And the other is something I think has gone a little out of fashion in this time. We used to say all the time, didn't we? Maybe I'm just not remembering it correctly. We used to say that chant Hare Krishna and your life will be sublime. Did we? That's not said so much anymore. More like chant and be happy. But chant Hare Krishna, your life will be sublime. That's actually very important, because Krishna consciousness is meant to be an experience. It's not meant to be armchair philosophy. So the first one of the two sections of this purport I like debunks the idea that armchair philosophy is what we do in Krishna consciousness. No, there has to be active engagement, active service to the Supreme Lord. And the second part says, if you do that, guess what? It's going to be sublime. Your life will be sublime. It means you'll have some kind of experience. It means you have an inspirational experience that you'll have. So, what does it mean when we talk about Krishna consciousness is sublime? That's the question. What is it that makes a difference in the lives of a devotee from a mental speculator? What is that sublime? That sublime makes a difference, so what is it? Well, there are three things that make it different in terms of what is sublime. Is that which inspires a sense of awe, a sense of overwhelming devotion. You can just imagine the feeling of devotees of Lord Chaitanya when they saw him for the first time. Their hearts melted and they naturally fell to the ground in offering obeisances to the Lord. Because they were experiencing something. They're experiencing something beyond the ordinary. Beyond the ordinary. That's what Krishna consciousness is meant to give us. Something beyond the ordinary. Some awe-inspiring, inspirational experience. That's what we're hankering for. And that's not there, not available to the philosophical speculator. The processes are different. So, sublime, this concept of being sublime can be understood if we look at it in terms of philosophy, if we look at it in terms of literature, and if we look at it in terms of art. So, in the philosophy of aesthetics, sublime means the quality of greatness. A greatness that's beyond all possibility of calculation, measurement, or imitation. This sense of awe and wonder. So that's a philosophical understanding of sublime. In literature, we find descriptions that excite thoughts and emotions beyond our ordinary experience. And in art, art is productive of the strongest emotions that the mind is capable of feeling. So these are different concepts of this idea of sublime. But actually what it boils down to is being inspired by realizations coming from interaction with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotion. The dynamic I was speaking about, not just being armchair philosophers, but experiencing actual exchange with the Supreme Lord. Sometimes we say, I had a realization. I had a realization the other day that XYZ about Krishna. That was something, isn't it, that's beyond your ordinary activities daily. That's why you notice. You go, this is something special. I wasn't thinking of meditating on this, but I got an inspiration and it solved a question I had about Krishna consciousness. something beyond the ordinary, the realizations that we say we have. And actually, it's those experiences are sparked by these three kind of understandings of the word sublime. We're going to, in a few minutes, go to the presentation part of our talk today. And as we get there, I want you to think about realizations you may have had or inspirations you have in Christian consciousness and how they are found in the same type of experiences that Arjuna, for instance, had when he saw the universal form. That's going to be the subject matter of the dramatic reading, the universal form. And I think if you listen carefully, which I hope you will, you'll find these aspects of what the sublime means, what is the sublime, in Arjuna's experience. He will be overwhelmed. He will be taken beyond himself. He will find himself humble, insignificant. Often our realizations are about how insignificant we are in experiencing that insignificance. We find that in the experience of Arjuna as well. So these things make a difference in the life of a devotee. It's not meant to be a dry process. It's meant to be a joyful process, full of active interaction with the Supreme Lord. That's why the statement was there, Chanari Krishna, your life will be sublime. You'll experience something beyond the ordinary in terms of knowledge, satisfaction, and eternal happiness. So we can have Madhumati and Jamadarshini come forward. I'm going to give them the mic. You're going to have to come close because we have two mics, one's here.
Hare Krishna, everybody.
O Arjuna, whatever you wish to see, behold at once in this body of mine. This universal form can show you whatever you now desire to see, and whatever you may want to see in the future. Everything, moving and non-moving, is here completely in one place. But you cannot see me with your present eyes. Therefore, I give you divine eyes. Behold my mystic opulence.
Sanjaya said, O King, having spoken thus, the Supreme Lord of all mystic power, the Personality of Godhead, displayed his universal form to Arjuna. Arjuna saw in that universal form unlimited mouths, unlimited eyes, unlimited wonderful visions. The form was decorated with many celestial ornaments and wore many divine appraised weapons. He wore celestial garlands and garments, and many divine scents were smeared over his body. All was wondrous, brilliant, unlimited, all expanding.
with hundreds of thousands of suns would arise at once into the sky. Their radiance might resemble the effulgence of the Supreme Person in that universal form. At that time, Arjuna could see in the universal form of the Lord the unlimited expansions of the universe, situated in one place, although divided into many, many thousands. Then, bewildered and astonished, his hair standing on end, Arjuna bowed his head to offer obeisances, and with folded hands began to pray to the Supreme Lord.
Arjuna said, "My dear Lord Krishna, I see assembled in your body all the demigods and various other living entities. I see Brahma sitting on the lotus flower, as well as Lord Shiva and all the sages and divine serpents. O Lord of the universe, O universal form, I see in your body many, many arms, bellies, mouths and eyes expanded everywhere without limit. I see in you no end, no middle, and no beginning.
Your form is difficult to see because of its glaring effulgence, spreading on all sides like blazing fire or the immeasurable radiance of the sun. Yet I see this glowing form everywhere, adorned with various crowns, clubs and discs. You are the supreme primal objective. You are the ultimate resting place of all this universe. You are inexhaustible, and you are the oldest. You are the maintainer of the eternal religion, the personality of Godhead. This is my opinion.
You are without origin, middle or end. Your glory is unlimited. You have numberless arms, and the sun and moon are your eyes. I see you with blazing fire coming forth from your mouth, burning this entire universe by your own radiance. Although you are one, you spread throughout the sky and the planets and all space between. O Great One, seeing this wondrous and terrible form, all the planetary systems are perturbed.
All the hosts of demigods are surrendering before you and entering into you. Some of them, very much afraid, are offering prayers with folded hands. Hosts of great sages and perfected beings crying, "All peace," are praying to you by singing the Vedic hymns. All the various manifestations of Lord Shiva, the Adityas, the Vasus, the Savyas, the Vishvadevas, the two Ashvis, the Maruts, the forefathers, the Gandharvas, the Yakshas, the Asuras, and the perfected demigods are beholding you in wonder.
O mighty armed one, all the planets with their demigods are disturbed at seeing your great form, with its many faces, eyes, arms, thighs, legs, and bellies, and your many terrible teeth, as they are disturbed, so am I. O all-pervading Vishnu, seeing you with your many radiant colors touching the sky, your gaping mouth and your great glowing eyes, my mind is perturbed by fear. I can no longer maintain my steadiness or equilibrium of mind.
O Lord of Lords, O refuge of the worlds, please, be gracious to me. I cannot keep my balance, seeing thus your blazing, death-like faces and awful teeth. In all directions, I am bewildered. All the sons of Dhritarashtra, along with their allied kings, and Bhishma, Drona, Karna, and our chief soldiers also, are rushing into your fearful mouths. And some I see trapped in heads, smashed between your teeth.
As the many waves of the rivers flow into the ocean, so do all these great warriors enter, blazing into your mouth. I see all people rushing full speed into your mouth, as moths dash to destruction in a blazing fire.
O Vishnu, I see you devouring all people from all sides with your flaming mouths, covering all the universe with your effulgence. You are manifest with terrible, scorching rays. O Lord of Lords, so fierce a form, please tell me who you are. I offer my obeisances unto you. Please be gracious to me. You are the primal Lord. I want to know about you, for I do not know what your mission is.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Time I am, the great destroyer of the world, and I have come here to destroy all people. With the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here on both sides will be slain. Therefore, get up. Prepare to fight and win glory. Conquer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Sabyasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. Drona, Bhishma, Jayadrath, Karna, and other great warriors have already been destroyed by me. Therefore, kill them and do not be disturbed. Simply fight, and you will vanquish your enemies in battle.
Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, O King, after hearing these words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the trembling Arjuna offered obeisances with folded hands again and again. He fearfully spoke to Lord Krishna in a faltering voice as follows.
Arjuna said, O Master of the senses, the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name, and thus everyone becomes attached to you. Although the perfected beings offer you their respectful homage, the demons are afraid, and they flee here and there. All this is rightly done.
Thank you very much.
Again, thanks to Madhumati and Amadarshini. Dramatic reading. The dramatic reading which shows very clearly the overwhelming experience of what it means to be sublime. They had a realization, Arjuna had a realization, and he was expressing it. So that same type of experience is available to us. What is what our Krishna consciousness should be made of. Of course, you may not have such grand realizations and experiences as we just heard. But even small realizations or beginning realizations can be as earth-shattering to the conditioned soul. Think about yourself when you first made the decision to take Krishna consciousness in your life, to take it seriously. It was probably based on the same kind of realization of the grandeur or the grandeur presence of the Lord, or even a terrifying yet incredible attraction. I don't know that he took the Krishna consciousness, but Oppenheimer, the one that discovered the atomic bomb, when he saw the tremendous power released by that, what did he say? What did he quote? He quoted Bhagavad Gita, Time I Am. So in other words, even just by seeing in nature the tremendous power and opulence of the Lord, the natural response is a humble devotee praying for understanding of the Lord and the mercy of the Lord. And so we all have different realizations or experiences in Krishna consciousness, which provide for us an exchange with the personality of Godhead. And out of this world experience and realization, which is what makes the difference between being armchair philosophers and devotees of the Lord. Because of this quality of the sublime. And it's not just limited to the kind of expansive, fearful realizations or revelations that were given to Arjuna, but even on the other side, the far other side of devotion to Krishna. Take, for instance, the Dhammadharastaka that we just performed here, and that's done every morning and evening in the temple. That ceremony of offering lights to the Supreme Lord and having that type of reciprocation is just as much an experience of the sublime as the fearful, the fearful images that Arjuna saw. Actually, there are many experiences we have, either as a community or individually, that touch on this sublime experience. Whenever we offer a deity outfit, my particular, of course, it's there every morning at greeting the deity. The Lord is anticipating and then expressing themselves verbally when they see the darshan of the Lord. But especially when there is a new outfit and the pujaris take further care to decorate the altar so elaborately and with the Lord in new clothes dressed so nicely. And then when the curtain finally opens after a kirtan, then there's a feeling, there's a tangible feeling of satisfaction, of exchange, beyond the bodily level. It's actually spiritual. So we experience this regularly. Maybe we don't recognize it or point it out to ourselves consciously. But these are experiences which keep us in the practice of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's easy to slide back into just philosophical speculation. We want more than that. So chant Hare Krishna and your life will be sublime means that you come to the realization that I want to live a life like that. I want to live a life like that. In reciprocation with the Supreme Lord and on a daily basis. So it's important for us to step back and take a look at what's happening to us as we practice Krishna consciousness. And this is one way that I found personally very beneficial for myself, to realize how the Lord is reciprocating and how my life can actually really be sublime based on that kind of realization. And there's so many opportunities. There's the sublime reveals itself in terms of philosophy, as we explained earlier, in terms of literature, like Bhagavad Gita, like Srimad Bhagavatam, and in art, different art forms. Actually, Krishna's pastime, his Leela, is the primary subject of art in India. There's always different depictions of the Lord's activities with his devotees. And so we should welcome these types of opportunities to understand Krishna and chant Hare Krishna and let our life be sublime. So are there questions, realizations? Yes?
Roberto, that was really wonderful. Particularly, it was wonderful for me because many years ago, I was at an art fair in 1973 in July, and Jovan Oxenfugo came up to me, and he handed me a card, and he said, "Chant Hare Krishna and make your life again." And so then he left, disappeared. So I'm chasing him, you know. I want to make my life sublime. Well, how do you do that? How do you do that? And then I went to the temple, and 48 years later, I'm sitting and listening to your sublime words, watching the sublime deities in this wonderful sublime temple, and basically my life has been sublime by chanting Hare Krishna. So it's really true. It's a word that I don't think there's, I don't know, are there synonyms to that? It's not like exciting or thrilling or divine. I mean, sublime just takes you into a very different dimension and has that magnetic pulling power to it. It truly is a wonderful word.
Well, one of the descriptions you find most of what is sublime involves experiencing the grandeur of nature, of relationships, of art, compared to the insignificantness of ourselves. That dynamic of the overwhelming presence of the Lord and a real look at who we are as insignificant servants provides that feeling of sublime nature that makes one want to dedicate oneself to that life. And thank you for sharing, because you've showed that in your life, sitting from 73 on. And how many people can really sit after all those years and say that I wanted a life like this and I got a life like this? And I'm thankful for it. Thank you. Yes?
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. My question is, please correct me if I'm wrong or if I have the wrong understanding. The soul, is it an impossibility for the soul to be actually separated from Krishna in all reality? Is the soul separated from Krishna, or is the conditioned soul dreaming in a state of maya or illusion that he is separated from Krishna and in the material world?
Well, you're correct in that we're Nityadas. Jivesvarupaya Krishna Nityadas. Our eternal relationship is that Krishna is a servitor, and that connection is never broken. Although, for all practical purposes, the maya potency of the Supreme Lord is so powerful that if we fall under the sway of maya, we can essentially eternally live separate from Krishna in ignorance. Therefore, Krishna comes as an incarnation in this material world to show his eternal pastimes and to save those who have chosen, who forget him, and live their life as if they had no connection. But how is it possible that we have no connection? God is controller of everything, the origin of everything. So there's no separation. But practically speaking, you leave yourself in ignorance. That won't be reality to you. Reality will be that you're suffering eternally in the material world. Is that all right? Did my voice go a little soft? Did you hear what I said?
You said There is no separation, actually.
Right.
So, there's no separation, actually. So that means that actually the conditioned soul in reality never left the spiritual world. Is that a misconception?
No. Not a misconception, but as I often say, it's complicated. Anyone else?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Prabhu. Krishna consciousness is a sublime process. Somebody who starts and sticks to it after 42 years, and there somebody who started and he was not able to stick to it, why that sublime process could not hold him? What makes him to flicker, you know, after starting? And my follow-up question with that is, do we have a free will, or shouldn't that process keep it to that process, you know, in the Krishna consciousness, and not let us go out of or deviate from that path? Why doesn't have that?
Living eternally, the servitude of the Supreme Lord, and one can do that service in knowledge, in love and devotion, or one can do that service in illusion, suffering in this world. And so, we have to choose. And that right won't be taken away from you. So you say, why doesn't the sublime nature automatically influence everyone to stay as a servant of Krishna? Because we're individuals, eternally, and we have a choice. We have a choice to accept the Supreme Lord or to reject the Supreme Lord. That's up to us. And so, we always have to be aware and keep ourselves under the shelter of the Daivipa Krishna, as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. Keep ourselves under the protection of there. And if we don't, then we can be victimized and have to suffer in the material existence. So you have the choice. So best, and you make many choices, best to investigate, to inquire, to find out what's going to be the result of your choice. And that's what we do by studying the Shastra, associating with saintly persons. And when we do that, then we can make the right choice to stay with Krishna and not be attracted by his material energy.
So Krishna knows what choice I'm going to take. If that is true, because he knows future, he knows past, he knows which choice I'm going to take, 2 days from today, or you know, 42 years from today, he knows that. That means the path is already defined.
He also loves you, and so he makes all arrangements for you to take good counsel, good instruction from him, and to stay under the protection of his divine energy. But he loves you, and that love is part of that expression of love, is he gives you the opportunity. You can take it or not. And so we have to be intelligent enough, we have to be fortunate enough to take it, and not unfortunate. Prabhupada himself said that now you become fortunate by taking shelter of Krishna consciousness. Don't become unfortunate by giving it up. I believe Mother Chair has something in this regard.
was just going to say, like, that every soul has a free will
to choose, but what happens after we choose is the material nature acting on us. Like, if we choose Krishna, then the Supreme Lord, but if we choose Maya, then it's just the modes of material nature take over. We have no free will after that. But we do have the free will to choose. That's our only free will. Other than that, we're just in the waves of material nature, right?
Get on a plane going to San Francisco, that's your choice. Once you get on the plane, you're going to San Francisco. Any other questions or points? Well, it's 6 o'clock. We should end there. Hare Krishna, thank you very much.